It's great to have the new MSU College of Law Dean Lawrence Ponneroff join us. Welcome. It's great to have you on the show, and look forward to this conversation.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
The Michigan State grew up a little bit when the law school came on campus. Talk about a little bit the perspective that you have of the law school on a bigger campus environment and what that means for the law school.
I've been at many law schools. I've had difficulty holding a job, but they've always been parts of major universities. To me, that's a very important aspect of a law school that I would be interested in, is to be part of a larger campus. What really attracted me to this position is the situation here is unique in that, in many ways, this is a brand new law school. Mm-hmm. The ink on the last MOU, which fully integrated us academically into the university, is barely 5 years old. And that presents the potential for lots of opportunities, a high ceiling. I think we've only begun to scratch the surface in terms of really leveraging the MSU brand. But unlike a brand new law school, we have a 125-year-old tradition, right, having educated four generations of leaders in law, business, and politics in Michigan and beyond.
Right. The opportunity to collaborate on this campus are immense if you take advantage of those opportunities. And I would suspect that your faculty, your students, get that opportunity with a multitude of different curriculum and activities across our campus.
Well, absolutely. And we'd also like to see additional collaboration both on the faculty and student level. In terms of our educational product, there's very few problems that are purely legal problems.
Right.
There are always dimensions to that problem that call on the expertise of different disciplines. So having an appreciation for whether it's psychology or business, and able to recognize that in addressing and trying to solve a client's particular problem, it's not just the black letter legal rule, but the broader gestalt that has to be explored is important. So we want our students out in appropriate courses around campus.
In some ways, you would correlate that with medical school and what physicians go through as they're training to become doctors. Much of that process is not just how to treat illness or to correct injuries. It's to learn how to cope, how to talk, how to be with people and socialize.
I think that's exactly right. We have a trial practice institute where a mandatory course is theatrics.
If you think about law schools and law school curriculum, and as your alums tell me, you know, the sort of a constitutional law torts, there's a part of the curriculum that over the 125 years, if you would look at the names of the courses, probably hasn't changed
right.
A lot. But what are the biggest changes for law schools as you try to think about the 21st century? What are the big things on the horizon?
Some things are exactly the same as they were in 1890, but there have been changes. I think the biggest change that I've witnessed over my career, when I went to law school, basically law school was a graduate liberal arts education. And after all, law is one of the original humanities. But there was really no expectation either in the law school that they would teach you how to practice law or in the profession that you would graduate with any of those skills. There is an enormous amount now of pressure on us to be more applied in our educational program because there is a much greater expectation in the market that our students, our graduates, are going to be able to hit the ground running. So the advent of clinical education, simulation courses, the widespread use of adjunct faculty, practicing lawyers and sitting judges, because what do most of us know about practicing law anymore, is a real change. On the other hand, we don't want to lose. We don't want to just produce able technicians. We do want our students to graduate with critical thinking skills, The ability to reason analytically, to engage with the world in a almost classic liberal arts sense. And if we don't continue to do that, we don't do them, the profession, or society much good.
And how do you think about that in the context of specialization, sports law, Native American law, other things that the law schools have added along the way?
Yeah, it is certainly the case, as you well know, that law schools have developed specialty curricula, almost like majoring in environmental law or majoring in intellectual property law. And yet, the reality is that law school still is a generalist education, and the whole first year is mandatory courses, the torts and constitutional law that you mentioned. Then there are a goodly number of upper-level courses that virtually every law student does and should take. That leaves very few blanks on the dance card for those specialty electives. So really, our certificate programs are structured ways of advising students, but really a student who wants a deep specialization in an area will typically go on to a LLM program, a master's in law program, or develop that expertise in the practice.
Or essentially get a joint master's law degree while they're at Michigan State.
That's right. And we have several joint degree programs, and we've just recently changed our message to our applicant base, saying we have these programs in place, but in addition to that, if you have an interest in doing a master's program while you're here, even a PhD program, and we don't have that program, just tell us what it is you want, and we'll make it up for you.
When the transition was made initially with then the Detroit College of Law to the campus, that list was a list that was what the students wanted to do, not what the faculty thought the students should do in terms
right.
of the master's degree programs. It reflected that mm-hmm. and as with many things, things get cemented in place over time
right.
and put in brochures and other things as being the only things yeah. that people can do, not just as an illustrative set. So I think the communication was really important because the idea, I think, in this collaboration now, this more full integration after the last 5 years, is really to have a law school with very permeable boundaries
right.
between the law school and the university, which is not typical of law schools, particularly very highly ranked law schools. And we wanted to shift that culture some as we made this change. But it's always interesting how things get into a list and they're very hard to change once they're into the list.
Well, it's always, you always have to watch out that the reason you do something a particular way is that's how you've always done it and be re-examining it constantly. And I think you're right. Historically, law schools tended to be silos, even law schools that were right on campus. And, right. you know, what an enormous waste of the resources that are around you.
Now, law school applications across the country have been declining, and law firms are hiring fewer people. There's a sort of a tough, by some students' definition, job market. And these are all known now because everybody has all this information on their phones, and it's a little bit reminiscent of my experience with engineers. You know, I've sort of gone the cycle of engineers are the most valuable thing in the world. Well, you know, maybe they're not so valuable. Maybe it's really a business student with a technical sort of minor. That's what we really want. And now, you know, the world says we can't get enough engineers. So I'm sure part of this is cyclical. But what would you say to somebody, our listening audience, who have students entering college now, students who may be nearing graduation from college, about why it's really a good investment to think about law school?
I think the important message there, law schools used to be default programs for smart kids who didn't know what they wanted to do with their lives. I think we're all too expensive to indulge that attitude of falling into law school. But by the same token, I often, when I'm talking to undergraduates that are considering law school, First, I say, make sure this is a serious commitment on your part, because it is a big investment of time and money, and it is a tough market. But I have, you know, over the 12, 13 years now as a dean, run into scores of alumni who are not in the traditional practice of law. Some never were. Some moved out of it. And they're real estate developers, and they're investment bankers, and they're corporate managers. One of them is the general manager of the Miami Dolphins, right. Actually. Had been the Jets. Was a former student. But every one of them, to a person, tells me that he or she believes they are better off in whatever their chosen profession is for the skills that they acquired in law school. So I think that that is an important message to prospective students to recognize that there is value to a legal education beyond the traditional practice of law. And it's something in a difficult job market, and it is, that our students need to be thinking about. They can put, as long as we do our job right, they can put their education to work and get value from it in a lot of different ways.
And partly the, you know, in the sense of that's why you do some minors or potentially some joint degrees, but it is this process to think and adapt and be able to think about both rules of law, as it often says, and context, and put those together very, very effectively. And most business decisions, most life decisions in your companies come from that combination of some parameters of rules and some and context and how you can put them together in the best way. But rankings and ratings are really only reflecting now those traditional law jobs.
That's right.
I mean, which is one of the, so if you're a place like us and you see this as a broader humanities graduate program with these specialized skills in environment or entrepreneurship, intellectual property, other things, and you go off and you essentially work in a startup company as one of their team, it doesn't count now in terms of as you're employed, but right. The way in which
the, that job is discounted in
the weighting of jobs. And it's really one of the more interesting parts of the way in which law schools are considered, because there is this, you know, which was one of the surprises to me in encountering law schools, is that you know, there is this fundamental philosophy about the value of it and how it can be applicable across a startup company, General Motors, a law firm, a federal regulatory agency, USDA, in terms of have people who are doing regulatory issues that sure. are not necessarily the lawyer for the USDA. We have a person who's, and then we have people who are the legal counsel for McDonald's. I mean, so you have all these variations of jobs, but in rankings and ratings, only the most traditional count.
Yeah,
and it's really I find it really an interesting way of the profession both talking about itself and at the same time using
rating themselves
in terms of the traditional ways.
Well, I guess it's just another example of no good deed goes unpunished because
I think you use that line too.
Oh, all the time. I do believe that by making our graduates good citizens and able to be successful and effective in whatever we do, we're doing them a great service. But from a pure rankings point of view, that's not the direction we should be taking.
Well, and I also think that if you look at you know, how this generation of students in particular appears to be more concerned about lifestyle balances along the way. Some of the traditional ways in which young lawyers are introduced into law firms and the way in which compensation is structured is in some ways a very interesting cultural tension with, say, particularly young people who are already invested 3 years in graduate school after 4 or 5 in the undergraduate, and now they're getting to their 30s, near 30, right, and they're thinking about lifestyle, families, a whole range of things, and there's the traditional process of law school, legal firms is just very different for that junior lawyer in terms of hours, expectations, and some other things. And so I think when I talk to students and they think about being a lawyer, they think about it in that context, mm-hmm, not the broader ways in which law as a area of study is applicable to all of these other things.
Well, I think that's right, and it's still true. If you want that high-paying, big city, big firm job, they're available, and they're going to pay you that big salary, but they're also going to get it out of you, which means that they're going to have very high expectations of the amount of time that you're going to devote to the firm. And as you say, almost sociologically, this is a generation that is much more sensitive to those work lifestyle balance. So I hear from alumni all the time, your graduates don't want to work hard enough. I said, maybe you ought to live a little bit, but be that it may, it's a tension. But you also students need to be self-aware. And it's fine to want that, but then don't put yourself in a position where you're not going to get that. And that's part of our responsibility in how we counsel our students with respect to their career path.
The case study method, the classroom method, is also very much a part of the teaching of law, with now, instead of going to the library, I have the books on my computer. So how do you think, not necessarily now, but also in the future, that this sort of technology-rich environment can distinguish MSU Law?
Well, I think there's potentially a number of opportunities. We have a program right now called Legal Research and Development, Legal R&D, which looks at the changing way in which legal services are delivered, and the most important component of that is the disruptive effect of technology, whether it's robo-lawyer for an individual who wants to create a will, or it's a huge corporation in litigation doing e-discovery, where an algorithm is going to go through millions of documents in a very short period of time. Lawyers tend to be Luddites, so it's very important to us that we have our students not only prepared with respect to the doctrine, but also prepared to be effective in the next generation of delivery of legal services, which means to be appropriately savvy in technology. And we have a significant amount of instructional technology being used in the classroom right now, not so much by me, but certainly by my younger colleagues.
I was going to say, there is a generation gap.
I wanted to take technology just in a different approach. Social media, social issues,
yes,
being discussed on national platforms. Sports, there's quite a bit of it. Medical industry, quite a bit of it. Even during an election year, social media is used in a variety of ways. How is the law profession, I mean, everyone is having to cope with this technology change. How is the law profession coping with having social issues discussed on an open platform, which I think there's good and bad, and how you teach in the classroom of how to deal with that technology change?
Well, no, it's a great question, and it's also very tricky in the legal profession, because of the paramount importance of client confidentiality.
Right.
You have, young people now who are coming to law school who are accustomed to just tweeting out everything or posting everything on their Facebook, and we need to acculturate them that there are, once you're in the profession, there are certain things that are appropriate and certain things that are not. And by the way, you're never going to get in the profession if there's some things on your Facebook site that are not appropriate. On the other hand, I do think that the opportunity for interchange through blogs and continuing legal education can play a valuable role for a practicing lawyer. You no longer need to fly to a particular city and sign up for a 3-day conference in order to get specialized education in your field. You can get it sitting right at your computer, and as a consequence of that, be more efficient and effective in your practice.
So we're going to leave with the question of, so what's been your biggest surprise coming to Michigan State? Since you're the new kid on the block.
I don't know, surprised about, because it was really part of the attraction of coming here in the first place. And I know this may sound a little corny, but I really feel this sincerely. And that is how genuinely warm and open and welcoming people have been. I mean, not a surprise, but an expectation that I'm glad to see fulfilled.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye.